Welcome to another virtual interview on Elaine's Literary Salon. I'm your host, Jeffrey James Higgins. I own Elaine's Literary Salon and Restaurant with my wife, Cynthia. We've made Elaine's a literary hub in the Washington, D.C. area, and to date, I've interviewed over 155 authors. This might be 156. Today, I'm excited to interview David Dubois, a man who's overcome unimaginable adversity to write a book. I have so much respect for what he's accomplished. I speak at conferences and I teach writing, and I know I'll always use David as an example of the tenacity that it takes to accomplish a book and to finish a project. David W. Dubois is a retired U.S. Army officer, or excuse me, soldier, who served honorably for 21 years. He's a devoted husband and father of four. In 2022, David was diagnosed with amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, ALS, also known as Lou Gehrig's disease, a life-altering moment that led him to write his debut book. David is a passionate advocate for ALS awareness and research. Through his weekly blog, mentoring, and active participation on various ALS organization committees, he offers support and inspiration to others living with the disease. With his background as a military policeman and his personal battle against a terminal illness, David brings a raw, firsthand perspective to themes of life, death, and justice. His book, Beholder of the Eyes, weaves together the stark realities of ALS, a disease that slowly paralyzes its victims, leaving only their eyes to communicate, with a haunting fictional tale of a boy grappling with the traumatic loss of his mother to the same illness. Now completely paralyzed and able to communicate only through his eyes, David continues to share his story and fight for a cure using the only voice ALS has left him. His daughter Karina will assist us. So David, welcome, and Karina, welcome. It's good to have you both with us.
Thank you for having us this afternoon.
Thanks.
So we've got some questions pre-planned here, so let's just get into it. I'm really excited, by the way. It's an honor to have you guys with us. So David, thank you for your extensive military service. Can you tell us where you served and what you did?
I'll be reading my dad's answer. So he joined the military. He joined the Army on April Fool's Day, 1987, and retired as Sergeant First Class 21 years later in 2008. My drill sergeant told me I would not last 2 weeks. I guess the joke was on him. I served as a military policeman and was stationed in Germany, Korea, Hawaii, and several states in the 48.
Well, yeah, thank you so much for your service. What motivated that military service?
Well, that is a good question. I joined out of necessity because I was 19, living on my own, spending too much money partying. When I realized I didn't have enough money for rent in April, I did what any man would do. I ran to the nearest recruiter. I only asked for two things, to be an MP and to leave before rent was due.
I love it. Okay. How much did your work as a military policeman influence your writing?
Being an MP exposed me to crime and death in a way most people, including service members, don't see. Working in law enforcement hardens your heart. You put cuffs on people you just want to throat punch, but you can't. So you learn how to separate your feelings. As a writer, I do the same thing. Can you imagine if Stephen King could not do that? We would not have all of his works to entertain our twisted minds.
Man, that is so true. I spent 25 years in law enforcement too, and the things you see are quite different. I was just picturing when you said that. I was picturing Stephen King as a policeman. That could make for some interesting moments.
Oh yeah.
So David, you're suffering from a horrible disease. What is ALS?
ALS is a psychological thriller in real life. The disease slowly kills your muscle nerves, leaving you paralyzed from the neck down, leaving your mind and eyes functional so you can see and understand everything going on, but you can't move or interact with the world with your hands.
Yeah, it's horrific. When did you first learn you had Lou Gehrig's disease?
My first symptoms started in April 2020 after getting a COVID shot, and I was diagnosed in June of 2021.
Wow, not that long ago. How fast did it progress?
My progress was fast. Within 3 months, I was slurring my words, and by April of 2022, I lost 50 pounds. In November 2022, I had a tracheostomy and lost my ability to speak, but I didn't lose my voice. I used my voice through writing.
And what's your status now, several years later?
Currently, I am wheelchair bound, paralyzed from the neck down, and have 24/7 caregivers, only have the use of my eyes left.
Wow. You know, what you've done with that, with those is incredible. How are you able to write with ALS?
Yes, I use eye gaze technology, which uses infrared to track my eyes. I use it with an iPad and the different apps to do my writing. I use Google Docs, which allows me the flexibility I need to write and edit.
I'm just picturing what this must have been like 50 years ago when we didn't have all these technological tools. How horrible. So how long does it take for when you're writing for you to finish a page?
I guess it would take about 6 hours to finish 500 to 750 words. My eyes do get dry and tired, and I have to take breaks in between.
Yeah, I can't imagine. And, you know, and I talk to a lot of writers, and, you know, you tell them you do a page a day, you can do a book in a year, you know, at least get your first draft out. And to have to do it like that with your eyes, just absolutely amazing. I'm really impressed by your determination. What made you decide to write a book with all the challenges you have to do so?
Absolutely. I was taking a character development course with the ALS Association when I developed Clyde. The coordinator challenged me to develop it more. I decided to write the book that day.
Wow, that's inspirational. I talked to a lot of writers, and I think the numbers are something like 90 something or 88% of people say they want to write a book, and only a very small number actually ever finish it. I believe it's 3% ever start the book and 1% of them ever finish, something like that. It's just terrible numbers. What kept you going during the writing of this book?
My daughters and my nurse who I bounced ideas off of, and leave my kids a bedtime story. Wanted to leave us a bedtime story. A horrific one.
Yeah, that's a heck of a bedtime story. I don't know if anyone's getting any sleep after this. So tell us briefly about the book. It's Beholder of the Eyes, but do it without spoilers because I'm sure people want to read it.
Of course. It's a story about a boy whose life was turned upside down when his mother died and his last memories were of her eyes. He turns his memories into an obsession that turns dark and deadly.
Wow. I would say so.
I would.
So congratulations on finishing. It's a huge accomplishment. How did it feel when the book actually was published? Because that's a big moment for writers.
Absolutely. I never thought it would be published. It feels amazing, and being an independent author has allowed me the ability to become one.
That is cool. We live in a time when that's actually possible, right? For so much of history, that it wasn't even an option. What surprised you most during the writing?
I would say how easy this book was to write. Like, it was inside of me wanting to come out.
You know, that's how I can tell you're a storyteller. The people I know who have stories have this compulsion to tell, like they absolutely have to get the story out of them, and the story just flows through them almost like they're channeling. That's how I can tell the difference between people who say they want to write and actual writers. So how long did it take to write this and edit it?
I apologize. Start to finish 8.5 months, and he launched it on his birthday this year.
Well, happy birthday. And that's really fast considering what you had to go through. I mean, that's fast for most writers. That's actually amazing. You characterize it as a psychological thriller. What does that subgenre require?
It's an internal versus external conflict that focuses on internal struggles, fear, and moral dilemma rather than purely external action.
Yeah, in a big way, right? How did you go from the idea to a fully formed plot?
For me, the plot was formed around a timeline and events happening through it, and everything else just kind of fell into place afterwards.
And when readers read this book, what is it you want them to take away from this plot? Because it's dealing, obviously, with ALS.
The root cause for this story is ALS and how it rips apart everyone in its path.
When you're writing, how important was the setting for you, and what did it add to the storytelling?
In the story, the setting is everything because I don't see it working in a big city. In my head, I saw it as a rural town in the Midwest, which is where we spent most of our time growing up. So it felt right. It made sense.
Yeah, I love the personal connection to that. And I love that it's different, too. You see a lot of stuff like in New York City, right? So it's something that's a little different. I think that's definitely going to help you. Did you develop these characters from whole cloth, or did you base them on real people?
Mostly whole cloth with a sprinkle of truth. However, for Clyde, I imagined the rage of my own children feel watching my own slow death and not being able to do anything. This is something I have never told them.
I really would like to hear Carmina's thoughts on this.
You like to hear my thoughts on some of this? On this one in particular. Okay. So my dad is saying that for Clyde, the rage that he has and built within him is his interpretation of how we feel as his children and as his caregivers. And I'd say it's pretty accurate. When you first find out that your dad has a terminal diagnosis and you see this busybody, wonderful, playful, joyous man kind of be eaten away by this disease, I was incredibly angry. So I think that's pretty accurate. I'd say Clyde is a good manifestation of trying to hold on to the memories that you have. And thankfully, we have so many years and so many memories and so many instances like today where we can hold on and cherish those. And this book, this entire book writing process was fun to do together.
Yeah. Can I just ask you about that? Like, because when something bad's happening to one of your loved ones, it's almost worse in some ways because you have this helplessness, right? How did you deal with that anger?
Oh man. That's kind of like a complicated question because there's so many different ways to deal with the anger. I know some of my family members are the strap your boots on, let's get through the mud together. Like I have three other siblings, my two younger sisters and my older brother. For myself personally, I tried to dive into what I loved about my dad and tried to emulate that. So my dad's a big heart. He taught us, we grew up volunteering, doing Adopt an Angel, doing community work, cleaning up garbage on the side of the road with the Audie Murphy Club. Anything that we could do to extend the love that he poured into us, into our community. So honestly, afterwards, when the anger kind of subsided and became an ember that still burns, but for the most part, I just try to channel that into continuing to do the things that make my dad who he is and make me love him and appreciate him. So I try to take that anger and turn it into something positive. So doing community work, working with the kids in my neighborhood, gardening. My dad loves gardening. So I just try to channel into things that I love doing and sharing with my dad. And if he can't pick up the shovel, then we're going to make that garden special for him so he can take his wheelchair through and see all the cucumbers and flowers and squash and tomatoes.
Oh my God, that is so inspiring. Both of you are so inspiring. And you said that the book itself, working together on this, was something that that brought you joy.
Yes, absolutely. It was myself and my younger sister Chantel. She and I were kind of the main ones. We were all in the big Google document together. We'd reread it. My husband and I would put little notes of, ooh, maybe we could explore diving into this. And I loved writing. I was surprised when my dad wrote this book and how great he did, because he wasn't like a big writer. He's a storyteller. He loved storytelling. But writing, this was so much fun. It was something I enjoy. My sister's a big reader. We're big nerds. And so to see my dad dive into this and do so well, it was just so much fun to watch him untangle this story and create and flesh out these characters. And It was fantastic. It was such a fun experience.
I think everyone who's listening probably they're in that same family of people who love story and love reading. And so that's really magical that this helped you guys. So, David, how did you come up with the appropriate names? Because that's always so interesting in these books.
Yeah, most of the first names are family or friends. The last names I thought sounded cool for characters. Funny thing is, though, that one of my daughters, one of my sisters, was sadly salty that her character played such a small role.
Oh, that's great. This book is just so personal on so many levels. Tell us about your protagonist. What does he seek?
Yeah. So Clyde is our protagonist. He's the main character of the book. And the main thing that he strives for throughout this entire story is to see his mom's eyes again, to capture that memory and to feel the love in that gaze that she gave to him one more time.
Oh, it's so powerful, especially with the circumstances around this. So there's one thing to be a storyteller and there's another thing to learn how to write. How did you learn this art of writing fiction?
I've always been a storyteller. My kids used to invite me to field trips for entertainment. I also take classes to learn to tell stories in writing. And I can say he was absolutely the storyteller. We would take him on field trips or even just us going on family vacation. We called it the onion. Dad would onion the entire time. And he'd tell, oh, these mountains were the mountains that Zeus came down and he threw a something. It was always some elaborate story to the point where everybody would believe it. We'd have people joining our family as if we were one big tour group and he was the tour guide. So it was very natural for him. And writing, he fine-tuned with the classes and everything. But yeah, he's always been a storyteller. Always.
Yeah, I believe people are born with it, or, you know, with that need. And I think that what you're explaining shows that, right? Like somebody, if you're a born storyteller, it just comes out of you. So there's in writing and in conferences, people are always talking about plotters versus pantsers, you know, and people outliners versus discovery writers. Did you outline this as you went?
For this book, I mostly wrote and did some outlining. So we did some outlining, but I feel like it was more of what just kind of came out of you. And then we kind of fine tuned it from there.
Yeah, you know, I think most people are on the spectrum between those. They do a little of both. It's very rare to find someone who just like outlines completely and sticks to it, or those people who just make it up as they go without any kind of idea where they're headed.
I agree.
I just recently gave a class on writing, and the thing I spent the most time, like 15 minutes out of an hour class on, was writing habit. And developing that habit is super hard for all writers. How did you, David, how did you stick to your writing habit to get this book out in 8.5 months? That's incredible.
I'm retired and in my chair all day with an iPad in front of me. So I write when my eyes are fresh. I stop when it's hard to focus. Sometimes it's hard and you can't just power through, but I also like to put on some old school R&B in the background. Otherwise, it's too quiet and he's stuck alone with his thoughts.
Yeah, that's interesting. I listen to classical too. I mean, it's funny. I'm always curious, like neurologically, how that works with music and when people are writing, you know, because some people can't do it at all. Some people need total quiet, but I like it. I agree. I do the same thing. I like it too.
Yeah, background noise helps to kind of, especially depending on what you're writing, it might also help to kind of place the mood.
Yeah, I do different soundtracks for different types of books. And there actually is some science on background noise creating a space for creativity. And I'm not sure exactly how it works, but that is a real thing.
I agree. I believe in that 100%. I love it.
So once you finished the manuscript, did you consider getting an agent and going the traditional route?
Finding a traditional publisher is hard and expensive for a new writer who is not famous, or a million followers, or has a million followers, and I'm not either. Maybe after this podcast, I might have a chance.
Yeah, I mean, that is really true. Agents take something like 1 out of every 4,000 queries. A lot of them get between 30 and 100 queries a day. So you're right. It's a brutal, brutal process. I guess that's one of the benefits of being able to get your book out there. Once it is out there, right, you publish it, you put it up on Amazon. Discoverability is the name of the game. There's like 3 million books that come out every year. Have you found anything that works to have people notice that your book's out there? Because, I mean, it's a great story, and it's just an amazing – your story is amazing.
Writing a book and doing everything to get it published is not the hard work. Marketing is the hardest part of being an indie author. Authors need to fight to find readers through a jungle of books. On top of that, I can't go out and sell like others with my limitations. So I'd say for marketing, we mostly did with his ALS. He has his blog that he dropped. So we did a lot of posts about it on social media, on Facebook, on his blog. And then we also, when we go out and do fundraising events for ALS, we wear the shirt or we bring the book and the bookmark with the QR code. My mom makes bracelets. So we do word of mouth and a lot of virtual marketing as best as we can.
No, that sounds great. I mean, I think that any kind of ALS event or online forums or any place where you have people that are that where it's touched their lives are your key demographic for this. But honestly, it's for anyone. It's a really powerful story. So, David, what's next? Do you plan on writing another novel?
I am working on the sequel now. I left loose ends on purpose and my readers want answers. I hope to have my draft to the editors by March.
Oh my gosh. You are tenacious. That is so fast, but that's really exciting. This is fiction. Have you considered writing your memoir and doing a nonfiction account of your life and what you've gone through?
I have, but decided not to. However, I do write a weekly blog sharing my ALS journey, hoping to help others with theirs. I just posted this this week my 157th chapter. My goal is to publish a new chapter every Monday, and he's been pretty good about that.
You know, just as an aside, like if you at some point, like I've seen people put those blogs into books and be able and land big five contracts, you know, for specific things like that. It might be something you want to think about in the future because you've already done the writing.
Absolutely. It's definitely something that we all are a little bug in his ear of maybe we do that. So I don't know, maybe one day you change your mind or maybe in the future that's something that we all think about. But I think that my dad's a fantastic writer and he's done such a great job of taking away some of the, like, a peek behind the curtain of what it's like to be a person with ALS. And we, my sisters and I, some of my family members have done guest writing so that you can see as well, like, how it is from the caregiver, the family member. So I wouldn't be opposed to that. If my dad ever changes his mind, I think it would be a fantastic piece of writing.
Your family just impresses me so much. That's really spectacular. So people should read this book. Where should readers go to find it?
You can find my book on Amazon and on my blog. If you just type in on Google or your search engine, David's ALS Journey, it will pop up.
So David and Karina, thank you so much for sharing this. Your story is just incredible. The book is really good. Do you have any final thoughts you'd like to share with us?
Let's see. My dad said, thank you for inviting us today. I just want to say we all have a story in us. Let it out and bring it to life. Oh, I think that's really nice. I agree with that. And I do appreciate you having us on and having my dad here. And like you said, everybody has a story. And even if you've never picked up a pen, but you feel like you want to get your words or your story or your life events or your weird thoughts, your fun thoughts, your sad thoughts, your happy thoughts, write it out. Pick up a pen. You never know who wants to hear a wild story about a man who does horrible things for the sake of love and longing for his mom.
Oh, I love that. David, you are a true storyteller. And it just, anytime, and I know because I do teach and I counsel authors anytime somebody tells me how they can't get their book done because of some other things, your story is going to come right up. I promise you that. Listen, this is a real honor. You're a wonderful family. Karina, thank you so much for your assistance with this. And David, I'm really, really impressed with what you've done. Any way we can help you, let us know. And thank you for appearing on Elaine's Literary Salons podcast.
Thank you for having us.
And for last thing, for people listening to this, please go on Amazon and rate his book. And just help it be discovered by other people. It only takes a minute. Go on there and give him 5 stars. All right. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.